This is the Fabric Podcast, and the end, for now, of our conversation, Rooted. As we seek a life that is deeply woven, we tend to notice three distinct threads. We've looked directly at one of those each week of this conversation. We started with the strand of self. Episode 2 focused on others, including the natural world. And this week, we look at what it means to be rooted in that mysterious third strand, that unfathomably deep ground of being, the interconnection of all things. We try not to flippantly toss the word God around because of all the stuff that word stirs up, but we think it's worth it to wonder at the substance of the unknowable and see how we might be rooted in that third strand.
My name is Ian McConnell, and we are in the third of 3 weeks on this series called Rooted. And so what we've been doing is talking about rootedness in a three-stranded way. So at Fabric, one of the metaphors that I've learned about like right away is this three-stranded idea that kind of comes out of the Ecclesiastes idea of a three-stranded cord is not easily broken, and that life woven deeply is a pretty strong, powerful thing, right? And so the self strand, we've talked about what it is to be rooted deeply in ourselves. Whether we like it or not, we are rooted in ourselves. We're rooted in our histories, our stories, our lineage, our DNA, our culture. The second strand that we talked about is others, all others, so other people and all others, like in this vast ecosystem of being. We're rooted in that. We're rooted in that ecosystem as really important parts, and that may be one of the most simple expressions of love that we can offer to one another is to be fully who we are, nothing more and nothing less. And what I've been finding in myself, at least, in the last 2 weeks, is the idea that, like, I can't, the deeper I go into myself and my knowledge about myself, and the deeper I get into others and my connections with community and with the earth and the environment, that I'm butting up against something bigger. That there seems to be something bigger when we're talking about being rooted in a three-stranded way. I keep having this question, like, I wonder if there's something bigger going on in all of this, bigger than myself. And so whether we like it or not, we're rooted in ourselves, we're rooted in others, and whether we like it or not, we're rooted in the divine, a God that is just simultaneously so vast and mysterious and unknowable and unnameable, and yet also who is made known in the profoundly ordinary in our lives. Like the really minute stuff. Last week when we were talking about tree networks, aspen tree roots, and mycelial fungal networks that are underground, the wood wide web, I was sort of like, this is wild. Like, there's such a balance and an order to things that we're just scratching the surface of our knowledge about, of how things are kind of work together. So there seems to be this sort of sinew between each one of us, kind of a sinew within, like, my head and my heart and my guts. There's something tying all of this together. And so there's a lot of baggage with the word God, right? Those letters G-O-D, it's a title that really can't hold the fullness of what or who this divine being is. So just to prove a point, we're going to keep on the Menti theme. So pull your phones back out. There are unlimited responses to this. 5 at a time, though. What is a meaningful name or image of God or the divine or that third strand for you right now? Just sort of gut check in this moment. What's a meaningful image or name or maybe even metaphor for this being, this energy, this person, whatever comes to your mind? And if you're listening to the podcast later or watching this live stream later, hello. There's a lot of words up here. It's getting too small to read. We might have to post this on our on our socials later. We'll make note of that. This would be kind of interesting to take a peek at. But I'm seeing the biggest ones coming up: higher power, love, source, connection. Lots of small breath. Look at the dancing words. The big unknown, mother, parent. I would love to know how many unique responses we have come up with together. The names and images of God. You can keep adding to this in the next few minutes. I find it interesting that, like, in the Bible, which is one of the sources of knowledge we have about this divine being, there's one name that this God gives themselves, and it's Yahweh, in English is the way we would say that. In Hebrew, it's a verb root. It's like the root of a verb, meaning to be. It's the letters Yod, He, Wa, He, or Vav, He. To pronounce it, you almost can't pronounce it. It's like a lot of vowels. It sounds more like, I'm going to try to get my microphone really close here and pronounce it. It's more like, do you hear it? It sounds like breathing to pronounce these vowels all together. Like the idea that, like, to breathe, to be a breathing being, to exist, to be, is to utter the name of this divine, mysterious thing. The translation for the name that this divine being gives themselves is something like, I am what I will be. Or a lot of experts say that maybe even a better translation for this name is, they will bring into existence whatever exists. Okay, God, that's a flex. There is, as you can see on our board here, just the minds in the room and online with us right now, there's an incredible diversity of understanding of what or who this thing is. This sinew, this force or energy that is among all and in all and through all and connecting us all in our rootedness together as community, in our rootedness with ourselves, and in our connection to whatever it is. There's incredible diversity of images or of metaphors or of names that sort of get at part of who this is. But no one name, no one image, no one metaphor is going to hold all of it. It can't. I mean, this is really a moment of awe for us. Last week I was hearing, was it Casey was talking about, the in Abu Dhabi? It's Casey, right? In Abu Dhabi, there's a grand mosque. And in the Grand Mosque, there's a wall, and it's in Arabic, and I think, is it 99 names? There's 99 names for God on this one wall, in this one mosque in Abu Dhabi. And then in the book of Psalms alone in the Bible, there's just hundreds, tons and tons of different names. If we combined all of them, we'd pretty quickly come up with a list of like hundreds, if not a thousand, different ideas that kind of get at it and might be meaningful for us. So this is really, for me at least, about being in awe. The authors of the book of Psalms, like I mentioned, there's a ton of names, and Psalms is sort of like a book of lyrics. You know, I think of like in the MySpace days of the early 2000s. You know, you could like put a song lyric, and you'd be like, people would be like, are you okay? And you'd be like, I'm fine. Psalms, there's 150 of them. There's these song lyrics, and some of them are like joyful and happy and thank you, God, for it. And some of them are like, where are you, God? Right? The only, I go to bed at night and I weep, and my only food are my tears. There's this incredible, that one's actually in there. There's an incredible diversity in there, but in Psalm 145, I translated it my own way, and it gets pretty close, but There's this one psalm that says, "Great is God and so worthy of awe. Their vastness cannot be grasped." And so I want to say, if as we consider our rootedness in the divine, in that third strand, if you just find great comfort and a deep sense of connection and rootedness by considering the vastness, the mystery, the unknowable, unnameable, ununderstandable nature of the divine, of the sinew between all things, great. I'm really happy for you. If, however, that's not your experience, and that the bigness of God or the far-offness of God actually makes you feel somewhat distant or alone, or if you felt abandoned or like, what does this even matter? Is this real? I don't know. I don't care. I don't whatever. The good news is also, you're not alone. Not only are you not alone in this room, you're not alone kind of in human history, in biblical understanding. It's right there in the book of Psalms. There's these questions of doubt, and there's these ponderings of, are you real? Are you there? It sounds like, isn't that a, there's a book, like, are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. Yeah. Psalm 8 says, I often think of the heavens that you made and the moon and the stars that you put in place. And then I ask, why do you care about us humans? Why are you concerned for us? There is a long history of sacred texts and human experience that point to this dissatisfaction and a desire for an understanding of a divine being that is made known not just in like the stars and the skies and the grandness and the mystery and the distance and the space and the time and all of that, but in like small, profound, ordinary ways. And so one way that for me that I think about roots being revealed in this area of my life is kind of in a lot of these little, tiny, profound ways. Like anytime that I have a breakthrough in understanding myself deeply, I think there's something of a root being examined there. When we think about our relationships with other people, particularly for me, people who are different than me, in the act of coming together and sharing my story and hearing somebody else's story and listening to understand, not to judge or to respond, I feel like there's something divine in that. There's a sinew, there's a connection being made there. In mycelium networks underground. Jen, am I right? There's something there. In the return of songbirds to our yards and gardens, just in time for 8 inches of snow. Poor little buggers. When the oppressed are freed, when the hungry are fed, when the naked are clothed, when there are homes and there's warmth and there is safety and there's belonging and there's no question about the value of those things and there's no question about the value of each person, that for me is a major divine act. Because on my own, on our own, sometimes I don't think we get there. I think even like last week, when we all came up here and grabbed onto these rope roots and we held on to each other and we just breathed in each other's presence, that felt like a divine sort of connection and moment of pause. When we experience a deep, embodied moment of peace in spite of the world, I think the divine is being made known. Desmond Tutu once said that the good news to the hungry person is bread. I think roots in the divine are revealed when needs are met. And I think there's a certain level of trust that goes into relying on our root systems, whether it's our roots in God, in the divine, in that third strand, or whether it's relying on our rootedness in community, or relying on our rootedness and knowledge of ourselves deeply, who we are. There's a level of trust that I think happens in there when we're looking for that sustenance and that grounding in that location. I think especially when things aren't going our way, when we expect one thing and what happens is something other entirely. Today, if you're keeping track on the like churchy liturgical calendar, today is Palm Sunday, which is a day when that's marked in sort of the church year, remembering sort of Jesus' march on Jerusalem. So at this time, so this idea of expectations not being met, there was, 2,000 years ago, this idea that like, okay, the Romans have occupied all these lands and really, really oppressed people. Like the whole Middle East and beyond was occupied by Rome. And people were really struggling and being taxed and being subjugated to punishment for being who they are. And so there's this expectation that somebody, some savior is going to come, some messiah. There's this sort of like messianic tradition of waiting for somebody from the line of David who's going to come and be this ruler and a king and a military leader, and they're going to overthrow the Romans, and they're going to sit on the throne of power and usher in a new era of peace and prosperity and whatever that looks like for people. And so there's this long-awaited sense of delivery from oppression. And so people, as Jesus and his disciples are headed to Jerusalem to observe the Passover, the Jewish holiday of Passover, the crowds start to gather around him, and they're following him. And they are like cheering, like, we're going to take over, right? And there seems to be kind of like political theater happening too. Like, usually when people would, when conquerors would come to the walls of a city, they would come on a horse with military and like gold and military stuff, you know, it's just power, the marks of power are going to be there. And so there's this like political theater, like Jesus comes riding in on a, like a donkey or a young colt or something that's not a big war horse. And there's not an army behind him, but like, I'm thinking like Beauty and the Beast, you know? They're like, let's get the beast, kill the beast. And they like pitchforks and torches. They're gonna go get power. They're gonna take it. They thought that they were taking over and that Jesus was gonna be this like military and political leader and usher in peace and prosperity for all those people. And then when it doesn't happen, because it didn't, if you've read your history books or the Bible, it didn't happen like that. Like, at all, it didn't happen. That wasn't the point. So, a few days later, Jesus is gathered, and there's probably some disappointment. We know that, like, one of his disciples, this guy named Judas, was, like, pretty PO'd. He was not a happy camper. He was kind of critical of Jesus all along. Like, hey, we got to take kind of this Robin Hood idea. Like, let's take all the money and give it to the poor, right? That's what we should be doing. And Jesus was like, yeah, but like, there's more going on too. And so they're gathered together. They're having dinner together. It was like right before Judas betrays Jesus by selling him out to the Romans. And I think this is a faithful, this is an okay way to read this story. It's not one that you might usually hear during Holy Week, but I think it's a good way to read, is that maybe Jesus is addressing the disappointment that they thought this was going to happen and now something else is happening, right? I think he might be sort of talking about this at their dinner, and he's saying, you know, violently overthrowing oppressive regimes is one way that we could use our bodies, or probably even spill our blood. We could do that. But it's not how I'm going to use mine. And so I think what he's saying when they gather around the table and they're eating and they're drinking and they're having a good time and they're questioning what are we even doing here? I think he's saying, I'm going to show you a better way. Like, there's the human inclination to just conquer and take over and, like, do violence upon one another across boundaries of difference. But I'm going to show you, I think he's saying, how God will make themselves known. And I think it's through needs being met. I think it's through bread. I think it's through wine. I think it's through people coming together in community. Here we are. And they eat together and they drink together. And he says, every time that you eat and every time that you drink, remember that you are rooted in the divine. And that this third strand that we talk about is made known in needs being met, in thirst being quenched, in hunger being fed. I think that's true. And so, with that idea of finding our rootedness in the divine and recognizing the divine in seeing like the profound in the ordinary, just remember that you are rooted, whether we like it or not, in who you are, in the community that we're part of, in all of the earth, and that there's some kind of divine sinew tying all this together.
Thanks for listening. May this simply be the start of the conversation. Reach out if you want help connecting with a group virtually or in the Twin Cities, and tag @FabricMPLS with your own thoughts on social media. You can also stay up to date and find other resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.